should write a book, Fry. People need to know about the can eat more.
I'm getting this book on UFOs. Did you know they're real? But there's a huge government conspiracy to cover it up.
Oh, that's just a paranoid fantasy.
I want to be a book. You can pick me up, flip through my pages, make sure nobody drew wieners in me.
And welcome to the Not Your Grandmother's Book Club podcast, where we read them so you don't have to. Because we're pretty sure podcaster looks great on a resume. My name is Kevin, and I'm joined as always by my co-host Benedict, who's pretty sure DEI is why he keeps missing out on all of those great Soros jobs. Benedict, what's your favorite chowder?
Is there more than one? I mean,
there are multiple. There's New England clam chowder. There's New York, Boston clam chowder. There's sure. Corn chowder. There's those might be all the chowder.
Yeah, clearly you've had a chowder this week, which is why we're talking about it.
That's exactly why. That's why all of these questions get thought of. Yeah, it's something I ate recently.
I don't know that I've had a chowder ever, to be honest. So I'm not.
I don't believe you. You must have had a chowder.
This question? No, I've had a bisque. I've had a nice bisque.
Does a bisque? Well, a bisque like can have a cream base. So
yeah, I'd say lobster bisque is not dissimilar to clam chowder.
Okay,
it's just
now,
the bougie version.
I've just Googled, for completeness' sake, types of chowder, and. Okay. The list that shows up to me right now. So New England clam chowder.
Sure.
Corn chowder.
Okay.
Lobster chowder.
Oh,
and
okay.
Then this one, maybe a double up. Tilapia corn chowder. So it feels like a lot of
feels
these are
like
going to be
repetitive. Feels like we're reaching for different chowders.
Hey,
they're all the same.
Rhode Island clam chowder. There's a different one.
So what I will say is a bisque is a smooth chowder, but wherein does the difference lie? Are they
See,
all
See, the real
soup?
Thing I was setting you up for to say was Steven. That was going to be the answer that you should have given me.
It is certainly louder with chowder himself.
Yes.
I think that I don't really like clams, so my default answer will have to be corn chowder, I think.
Okay. Well, that's going to be mine, too, because
okay.
I had, as you know, just based off of context, fantastic corn chowder for lunch today.
Congratulations. Chowder, never my soup of choice, though, I will say.
You know what? I should have guessed that you wouldn't be I shouldn't have pegged you as a chowder guy.
What do you think, if you were like, this guy loves this type of soup, what do you think my soup of choice would be?
I'm going to go out on a limb here, Benedict. Mulligatawny.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. No.
You like a cold soup. We all know you. Come on.
I do. I'd forgotten that counted, but yes, I do love gazpacho. That's true.
Yes. Yes.
But I also like a well, I mean, it's not really a soup, but they often sell it as a soup with just more liquid added than it should have. But like a jambalaya type soup,
mm-hmm.
or like a
I
a
think
gumbo.
Jambalaya counts because it's served over rice. But all you can put it in a bowl and just eat that by itself.
That's true, yeah.
Fuck the haters.
Mean, I would call it a stew, but let's not get into the difference between soup and a stew.
We don't need any more of those arguments on this show.
An argument about sausages that I won.
As you claim. Benedict, anyways, you probably know what it is that we do here on this program. Other folks who have never had a chowder in their life, might not know exactly what it is we do here. And then I would say, this is the show where we go deep, to plumb the depths of right-wing thought by reviewing a chapter from a work of conservative literature, and in between, taking a look at other examples of the right, doing their best to make America hate again. Start us off, Benedict. Do you have a hot take for us this week?
Yeah, the Oscars were all right. They were fine. most of the things that like I thought should win won. So whenever the popular opinion agrees with me, it's everyone's right and I'm not wrong. So
I haven't watched an award show in years, other than
it's
the Game Awards.
That I have it on in the background while I'm doing other things.
I don't even know what channel. What would it be on? I don't have cable, but if I did have cable, what would it be on?
I think it was on ABC.
That would make sense. That feels like an ABC thing. Totally off vibes.
I think it's hosted by Jimmy Kimmel, who I think is an ABC person. So.
I thought he was on NBC. I have no idea. Like I said, I don't have cable. I don't watch any of this stuff.
No, Jimmy Fallon isn't on.
There you go. You're right.
There's too many Jimmys that host late night
shows. Too many fucking Jimmys. They need to fight to the death. There can only be one.
That's it. There should only be one Jimmy. It was fine. It was good. Lots of things won. Oppenheimer won. Zone of Interest won, which was good.
Did Oppenheimer win Best Dong Shot?
No, that was a salt burn for a fan.
Quick on the draw.
Best Irish dong shot.
You're still competing there.
Yeah, exactly. Unfortunately, Oppenheimer gets boxed out in both categories. You just can't. Anyway. No, it was good. Yeah, that one, Zone of Interest won. Poor Things won a bunch. All things that I think deserve to win. So I'm happy, satiated by the awards season, I would say.
What about Dune?
Dune was not in this year's
nominations.
Isn't
that release early enough to be?
It wasn't. Oh, okay. No, because it was only released like last week.
I'm sure it'll win something next year.
It will definitely win some stuff next year, yeah. People were mad about Barbie that not winning. It could have won a couple things, but I was
terribly mad about a Barbie that I totally knew didn't win before you said it just now.
Yeah, exactly. I was more mad about Past Lives not winning, if I'm honest, which I thought was the best movie of last year.
Well, our resident, the only person in the world still with a movie pass, Benedict, resident film critic here on NYGBC Pod.
Yeah, that's me. What about you? What's your hot take?
I was waiting for you to ask me. Come on.
Nope.
You know how this works. My hot take this week, Benedict. If a road is closed off on my normal route, I am completely lost. I have no fucking clue where I am or where to go or how to get home anymore. Something I realized...
Didn't the Obamas just do a movie about this? How we're all lost without, like, our...
Without our phones? No, I don't know if they did, Benedict, because I didn't watch the Oscars, but I can tell you that the moment I realized the road, which is, like, right by my office and only, like, maybe 6 minutes from my home, was closed... I opened up Google Maps and had to get directions to figure out how to get home because my normal route was gone.
The coward's way. That's what we call that.
It's the same thing now where it's like, if someone were to ask me my partner's phone number, I would not be able to answer. Without my phone, I cannot answer that question. Nobody knows phone numbers anymore.
I know just my wife's phone number. That's the only phone number.
It is impressive. That you have her number memorized alone, above anything else.
It's mostly from form filling, honestly, because I've had to fill in so many forms for, like, whenever we travel together or, like, for immigration stuff. Like, I always have to give a phone number, and I have a weirdly good memory for stuff like that. But I definitely know my childhood phone number.
Yeah.
And also the childhood phone number of multiple people I haven't spoken to in like 15 years.
There are, I don't even have that. There are a total of 3 phone numbers I have memorized, period. End of story. Okay, 4, including my own. But other than that, there are 3 I have memorized. My mom, my dad, and the home house phone number that I think isn't even connected anymore because they don't need a house phone.
I know my grandparents' home phone number, and then my immediate family members' mobile numbers, and then my 4 childhood friends that I lived on the same street as when I was growing up, none of whom I've talked to since I went to university. Nor do they live at those addresses anymore. So
I'd love it if you just started randomly calling. Hey, is this Kyle's mom?
Yeah. Can I see to Kyle, please?
Is he around? Can he come out and play in but the
I
U.S.?
I used to have to call. Did you do that? You used to have to
no,
call.
No, I wouldn't call. Them. I lived in a sort of neighborhood where you just walk down and knock on the door.
Community.
I've never hidden that I grew up bougie in a gated community with a golf course. No, I've never hidden that. But we would just walk down to our friends' houses.
My opponent thinks I've tried to hide my privilege in life.
I remember a few times where maybe like I asked my mom, like, "Hey, mom, can you call so and so and find out if they can play?" Just because I didn't know the number, and I figured my mom did. But that's about it. Other than that, I don't think there was, because none of us had. I didn't get a cell phone until I started high school.
Oh no, I used my landline.
That's what we would have to use. But yeah, we still just didn't have phone conversations. We just meet up, hang out. It was weird. Sure. Anyways, we are from a weird generation, Benedict. Mm-hmm. On to housekeeping this week. Remember to rate and review us on the iTunes. Follow us on the social medias at NYGBCPod and at NYGBCBen on Twitter. And on Blue Sky, you can find us at NYGBCPod and at BenYGBC. Updates. I only have two updates this week. One is that Benedict is going on vacation next week, which is going to obviously affect the show schedule. We're still going to have an episode next week, but it's probably, unless we have time to prepare it between today and tomorrow, which I doubt we will, because I know Benedict, we're probably not going to be doing a book episode next week.
Hey, I've read the book.
Oh, if you've read the book, then we can go. I just assumed you were going to get... I don't know why I didn't ask you about this off the air. I just decided to bring it up and smear you on the air.
I thought you were using me as an excuse. That's fine. No, I've read the
book. No, I'm ready to go for a book episode, buddy. We can do it. We'll get it done. All right. So I guess we are going to have a book episode next week. But,
never mind. Ignore that.
Probably won't have any new inductees into the Spooky World New World Order, that aside. The only other update I have this week, I had a dream. I wrote down a dream I had about the show the other night.
Okay, all right, let's
I had a dream, and I vaguely remember this when I woke up. I had a dream about we were doing the show, and for some reason, there was a subject that came up, and it was like a Republican politician who bred pit bulls and like did something weird. I don't remember what it was supposed to be that he did weird. And you said a line that had me laughing when I woke up, which was, "I'm surprised that someone who knows so many lesbians would end up being a bigot." And I just had to share it because the show has infected. That's it. That was it. The show has infected my dreams. And
nice
even in my dreams, you're still funnier than me on the show.
I don't think that's particularly funny, but whatever, that's fine.
It's funny if you know enough of my partner's ex-girlfriends. anyways, Benedict, I had to share that just for reasons. We have one inductee into the Spooky World New World Order blah this week, and that is, of course, this is someone, a new patron, someone who asked that we didn't use their real name, so obviously in witness protection, as we all know. But they did ask that we refer to them as NYGBC Fangirl. So NYGBC Fangirl, you are now part of our...
New World Spooky World Order, bro.
Thank you.
Hey, what you don't know is that's me.
Thank you. Thank you, Benedict. Oh, so very much. And of course, if you would like to join the Spooky World New World Order, blah, you can tweet or post about the show on social media, recommend any television, send me a screenshot or tag us in it. Leave us a 5-star review wherever you can and drop me a screenshot to let me know. Make a donation to a worthwhile charity, become a patron, or just get my attention with something good. With all that out of the way, Benedict, why don't we get into the meat and potatoes and perhaps some heavy cream and clams of today's episode? Which is, so I'll just say at the beginning, right? I had planned this week, as I've said many times, of getting back into the pre-Charlottesville, like, introductory episodes we need to do so we can talk about Unite the Right, and I started writing an episode about the Proud Boys. Obviously, they were involved with all this, and a lot of Proud Boys-centric characters were part of Unite the Right, even though officially... if there is such a thing for a fucking right-wing terrorist street gang, officially they weren't part of Unite the Right. So I started working on that, and I realized, like, this is not going to work. It needs to be multiple episodes. We got to do, like, pre-Charlottesville, and then we got to do, like, leading up to January 6th and all this. So I just pulled an audible, and I said, okay, I need something else. I need something else to do this week. And I went to, where else do I go in times like this, our beloved PragerU. And I found, as
the classics.
As we've mentioned in the past about PragerU, they have an entire section of content we have not dipped a toe into yet, which is their short documentaries section on the PragerU.
We've never
website.
Flirtatiously blown a kiss in its direction.
But maybe we will in the future.
Maybe. Maybe I'm doing it right now.
And so I picked one today that I think is going to be a lot of fun. It is called Restricted Colon. How big? Restricted Colon. That's the name. Restricted Colon.
That's how they feel. They are full of constipation.
Look, I've seen of plenty
this.
Of hours of Dennis Prager. I know all about restricted colons. How big tech is taking away your freedom. It is from September 29th, 2021. That is when it was published on PragerU's website. And look, boy, we're just going to get into it. There's so much fun stuff in here. There's so much fun stuff in here for me. So, starting off with, I'm 90% sure that you can buy that exact opening they just used in, like, Adobe. I'm pretty sure it's probably
generic.
It's a generic one.
Facebook demonetized my page for the high crime and misdemeanor.
Ooh, is that, did they put, like, feedback on that? Just, like, to make it sound like she was giving a big rally speech?
Generic digital noises, like, beep, 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 boop, boop, boop.
Yeah, but it was like that Facebook demonetized my page.
Oh, I'm pretty, okay, there's two things I want to note about this opening. First is the fact that all these people that are talking here, they cut them all off before they explain what they got banned or demonetized for. They never let any of them finish the sentence. And that is a trend you will see throughout this 20-minute documentary. They never touch on any of the details of what it is anyone is getting in trouble for with the social medias. They're just, well, I should be able to say whatever I want. That's the whole gist of it. And it was very funny to me. Also, I think that first voice might be Laura Loomer. Because that's who it sounds like to me.
It certainly isn't her on the screen.
No, not right now. But it sounded like her to me.
I have been
ad account
out
was suspended by Google.
We got suspended off Twitter.
Okay, pause it again. Sorry. They're trying to make it sound like a chorus of voices.
Uh-huh.
It's the same voice echoing back on itself. They've literally put an effect on to go, I was suspended by Google.
There are a couple different voices, but yes, they are just repeating some of them to have that chorus effect in the background, which is great. I do enjoy.
Twitter
My name is JP Sears. I'm a comedian and video creator. So I started...
Comedian. What kind of comedy do you do, JP?
Oh, Benedict, you're going to get to see some. Because JP Sears, who I'll tell you about a little bit. JP Sears is a guy who started off as a, I don't know, life coach type deal.
He has a life coach vibe.
Oh, yeah.
He has life coach energy. He's got that long, luscious hair.
Oh, yeah. Like, hey, don't knock on the long hair.
No. It's just I have too much time to focus on my long, luscious hair appearance. This man doesn't have a 9-to-5. This man has never seen a 9-to-5.
And the fact that his footage of him right now is him sitting at like a table next to a pool on his laptop. Big life coach vibes. But so he went this weird route, and you can find a bunch about him on the internet. There's a Rolling Stone article or maybe it was Vice. I don't remember which one. Rest in peace, Vice. But I'll link it in the show notes if it's not taken down yet. I don't know what they're going to do with the whole Vice website. But basically, he started out in this sort of life coachy thing, and then he went on to like wellness influencing, and then just went straight down the right-wing shithead conspiracy rabbit hole. He is
That's a well-trodden path, I'd say.
Very well. And there's also a whole bunch of everything you read about him or listen to. Everyone is constantly commenting on the fact that, oh, this guy's on steroids. This guy's absolutely on steroids.
Cool.
Yeah. It's one of those kind of guys.
It's very funny B-roll because you can see how, his back is so straight.
Benedict, posture is important, we know.
But his neck is so not straight. His neck is so fucked. It's like...
Get yourself an ergonomic chair, JP. But so JP, as he said, is a comedian, supposedly, and he is the comic relief for this documentary. Because you know how documentaries need comic relief.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's what his role is in this documentary, and you're going to see him do some comedy later, and I'm very excited for it.
Started posting videos.
Oh, he's also a huge anti-vax nut, who hosted
again,
a big anti-vax
rally. Wellness to anti-vax, well-worn path.
Oh yeah, obviously.
I believe in 2013, at the time they were just insanely boring videos, life advice videos on different topics.
I'd like to ask
it's good
you today.
That we can, oh wow, okay, all right. You can see, okay, he has
you can
shorter
see,
hair,
yes.
So as to demonstrate the fact that he is younger.
Uh-huh, and much
and
smaller
also,
muscles.
Yes, and also, yes, this looks boring. I
yes,
agree.
And he's standing like, on a street in front of a like street, row of hedges, fence, and then beach. That's where
yeah,
he's standing.
You know,
in this video.
It is so fucking windy. I can see without like without listening to this, all I'm gonna be able to hear from this video is.
I like to imagine there's like a line of 15 influencers recording video at that same beach spot.
For sure.
And if you just pivoted the camera a little bit, you get to see the whole line there. Yeah.
How can you truly heal depression?
What? That's the kind of content, Benedict. I was not able to find that video, but I guarantee what came after that was not good advice.
That is
I
probably
know that
the
it was
funniest
not.
Thing he's ever posted. Also, the smash cut to him now is really fucking jarring.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Bro, God damn it. This
Hold
man.
On. Is he in the same shirt? Go back.
Okay, you know what? Those shirts do look startlingly similar. Hold on.
Life advice videos on different video creator. So I started
sorry,
posting videos.
I went
videos,
back too far, but we'll
I
just
believe in 2013. At the time, they were just insanely boring videos. Life advice videos on different topics.
I'd like to ask.
Okay,
no, it's not
the video,
quite the same shirt.
The old one is a short sleeve.
Yeah,
and the
yeah.
new
so
one is a long sleeve.
Attached long sleeve. He's got the long sleeve version of the same shirt.
They are that. Almost. They look. They're a very similar color. Look incredibly similar.
Today, how can you truly heal depression?
When I started making comedy videos, some of them started to get some great views. In fact, I remember the first one.
So, like, you just saw him there sitting in front of his green screen to record. And he's very clearly stealing Cody Johnston's I'm wearing a bad suit that's not, like, put together. Maybe it has some holes in it thing. It's very clearly stealing.
I don't know. See, this is the thing that when people like this make comedy videos, I don't believe. We can say, oh, they're stealing this thing. I don't believe any of them have ever seen good comedy. So I refuse to believe that they've stolen anything. Because I think if they had seen someone who is a talented comedian in any way, they would be like, that's not me. I can't do this.
Oh, Benedict, wait until we actually see the comedy. And
I think I have seen some of this guy's videos. Honestly.
You probably have. You yeah. probably have. Because he's made some waves by being an anti-vax nut.
Being ultra spiritual has nothing to do with actually being spiritual, because no one even knows what that actually is.
I like pause it. Sorry,
Benedict. That was one of his comedy bits, by the
no,
way.
I understand.
And I yes, I know what you're about to say. I know exactly what you're about to say.
I would like to point out that the way we know this is comedy is okay. First of all, people watching it green screened onto an iPad. The
on
iPad
very clear is, stock footage. This is so clearly stock footage that yeah. they two people sitting on couch holding iPad stock. And actually, yeah, we know it's not. We know it's stock footage because it's not an iPad. It's some sort of pad, but it's not an iPad because there's no true. Branding on it. There's no signs. There's nothing on there. This is stock footage. They have green screened his YouTube video on of two people sitting on a couch watching and giggling too.
Yeah, exactly.
It's amazing.
I can't explain it any better than that. Yeah, it's incredible.
It's absolutely incredible.
Ultra spiritual means you look spiritual.
I put it on my YouTube
also,
channel.
Also, they're not laughing at like the right point of the
no!
video.
No,
they're not laughing at the
punchline. Their bodies are just like shaking. They're like they're having a seizure.
To me, that they're just laughing at this dickhead.
After about a week, it had a 1,000 views, which
okay.
astonished me at the time.
My name is Brian Amridge. I was the senior engineering manager at Facebook. I saw the role that communication technology could have in giving somebody.
Okay, he sounds like an ad for one of those like tech universities. That's yep. exactly what he sounds like there.
That's all he is. Yep. Sounds good.
With no power, no money, no connection to the media, a voice and the ability to get their ideas out there in front of other people. And I believed very strongly that the velocity with which a person could do that was sort of a fundamental lever.
He also looks incredibly familiar, to the point that I started going back through some other PragerU videos and trying to see if I'd seen him somewhere before.
He looks like David Wallace from The Office is who he looks like.
Oh shit, that is who he looks like. That's why I thought I had seen him before. That's exactly who he looks like. Holy shit. Wow. Good eyes. Good eyes, Benedict. And Benedict, this one... This one's just for you. This one's just for you.
The host of the Rubin Report, and I'm the co-founder of Locals.com. It's really weird.
Locals.com sounds like a website for swingers, right?
It was his alternative to Twitter. I sadly know too much
was
about
it
this.
Twitter, or was it like a Patreon alternative?
I think it was a Twitter alternative, yeah.
I remember something about it, but it being like for donations. I really thought it was like a Patreon thing. I don't know.
Actually, because you know these things are all free and you can sign up for them in 2 seconds, so it's like, oh wow, this is awesome. It's the Wild West. We can do whatever we want whenever we want, and nobody's our boss, and we can come and go as we please. It's all fantastic. And that's sort of the way it was for those first few years.
Pause
of YouTube
it, sorry.
Maybe even
you know what people always say about the Wild West. Oh yeah, it was fantastic.
Great time to be alive.
Yeah, famously, everyone wants to return back to that time.
You know, sometimes you had a small ranch in New Mexico and some bandits came and you had to rat on them to the federales. But other than that, pretty great. Pretty great time to be alive. Throwback to the Josh Hawley episodes one listened to.
Been for a decade of YouTube, actually. And then slowly, when you start doing some interesting things, you start...
Some interesting... Ideas.
This cuts
talking
to him
about
interviewing
free
Steven Crowder.
Start
is it?
Going again.
Was that?
Was that Steven Crowder in the chat, or was it someone else?
There's a couple of different people popping in and out. I think Sargon of Akkad, Carl Benjamin, makes an appearance. There's just a little clip package they're running. I don't remember. I didn't write down who all was in it.
It's the grain or being a little...
There he is. There's Carl.
Then slowly things start turning on you. You start noticing when you do things that are more controversial, certain videos seem like they really get depressed, or you're on Twitter and, you know, you say something that goes against the progressive orthodoxy of the day and suddenly you get three...
Sorry. Do you know what this actually is? Like, you build an audience saying one thing and then suddenly you pivot to another different thing. And
this
then
might
the
be
audience
a pretty...
you have, the audience you have cultivated and built painstakingly over years goes, that's not for me. And then nobody fucking watches it. And that's why. And then now you get into a feedback loop where you're trying to get this new audience. And then you keep creating content for that new audience. And oh, look, they're all coming back. And now I'm captive to my audience. Help, please. I'm a prisoner to my own success.
Benedict, you might be describing some Dave-centric problems here. That maybe he's attributing to the evils of big tech. But yes, I see what you're going at.
Retweets instead of, you know, 300 retweets or whatever it might be.
I'm Marissa Streit. I'm the CEO of PragerU. In 2011, I was hired to build PragerU. The idea was to create a...
What is it with people, and this is something that maybe it's just me who notice it, conservatives on film not knowing how to fucking type. They'll be sitting at a keyboard. They don't know how to fucking type. And I think it's just like, because when you get B-roll, they're like, oh, sit here and do some stuff. And you're just fake doing it. But why not just actually
but still,
type?
My default when I fake type is still to real type.
Yeah.
Like, it looks like I type. Like I'm,
Open up a Word doc and write out some lorem ipsum. You don't really need to you just have it look like it's natural. Come on.
A media educational company on the internet. So YouTube was the perfect destination for it. Suddenly they changed.
Also, I mean, I would be remiss if just a few days after the State of the Union, I didn't point out that they also put the only woman, maybe, okay, she's one of two women on this, in a kitchen. That is where her interview is happening. You can see the kitchen in the background.
Their community guidelines, they put notifications on our content.
Okay, not kitchen, living room table with A very nice bowl of fruit, I will say.
Probably not a point worth making, I would say. Nah. But never mind.
Start.
Look, I'm going to point out whatever is hitting my mind at any given moment. Stream of consciousness. That's how we work.
Editorializing
our content, making comments that our content is not accurate or inappropriate. That wasn't there in the beginning. We haven't changed. They changed on us.
I will agree that PragerU has not changed. Never change, PragerU. Keep being you. But yes, tech companies have started to point out they're liars who lie. And they're very mad about that.
Yeah, I mean, also, you know, there are... at the end of the day, it's just a market operation. Like, this is... Like, advertisers don't want to advertise on certain types of content. That's true of pretty much all political content. The actual answer for this is, like, yes, there may be some demonetization of videos. It happens to everyone across the political spectrum as soon as you talk about politics, because often what happens with these ad tech companies is they will bulk flag accounts and be like, this is a website or an account that regularly talks about politics. Nobody will actually review it, and then people will just go, don't put me next to any political content. And therefore the platforms will be like, okay, no ads on this. Like, that's it. That's unfortunately, that's all that's actually happening. There's no grand conspiracy.
And it's that is why you never hear any ads on this program.
Yep. Yeah, that's true.
So in the beginning, Facebook and YouTube lived up to the creator expectation really well. And then after a few years, I think Facebook really fell from the creator Mount Rushmore. But after a couple years, Facebook just wanted...
How many times can he say in a couple of years in one sentence? That's really the question here.
A lot.
...wanted me, the creator, to pay them to show the viewers the videos of mine that they wanted to watch in the first place.
Yeah, because it's a business.
Because none of these people have read Cory Doctorow's work. They don't understand that they're being inshittified. That's what's happening.
It's a business.
Yeah.
What they used to give you for free, you now have to pay for.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry.
We wanted to be like a glass of water. We wanted to be that transparent container that just lets you see straight through to the content. Back then, it really wasn't political.
We wanted to be like a glass of water and not have enough salt in us. I don't know.
That be did completely start lacking to change.
There we go. That works. By the way, I'm fairly sure they also stole that that little title card for Restricted, and I can't picture in my mind where from, but I know I've seen it. It's a bunch of wires on a screen, and the word Restricted is sort of buried in the wires. I know I've seen it, but I can't picture where. I know they stole that title card, though.
Became very insecure with the reliability of YouTube and all the platforms. I was seeing so many people get their videos censored, then I got censored. There was a video.
And so, yeah, we're
would love to know what they mean by censored in this context.
Well, you're about to learn a little bit about that, okay, and boy, is it sad. But okay. Also, I was about to point out along those same lines, again, remember, none of these people are telling us or will tell us why they got censored. What was it they did? What did you do, JP? They won't even give us the details about what happened. And his story, in a moment, is particularly dumb.
I made called The Conspiracy Theory Guy, where I'm actually making fun of conspiracy theories rather than touting them.
Adam and Eve, obviously, they've created an inbred population of 7 billion people. That's too much for this planet. More importantly, kids can be annoying. Have you ever been on an airplane with kids?
Okay, Benedict, that was the sample of his comedy. And
look, it's not my thing, but it's I get it as a very, very toothless satire.
Do you get it? Because Benedict, I'm about to play a little bit more of it for you. Because this is the video
that he played. That bit there.
Uh-huh.
Is fine. It's completely toothless satire that's not particularly funny.
I will agree that it is toothless. I will agree on those grounds. But Benedict, so he's claiming that this video was banned. And let me tell you, the fact that I haven't...
I can see that it's not.
The fact that I have it open on YouTube right now and I'm about to play some for you, and that it has almost a million views, I think says that it isn't bait.
From 8 years ago, when a million views was like a big deal, too.
It was like finding a lump of gold out in them there hills. Yes, but let me, so this video has multiple sections, right?
What's the most played bit? Because I can see...
The most played is a bit where he puts on a lizard mask and does a lizard people David Icke joke. Joke in heavy air quotes. There are multiple sections, right? So the sections in this were mind control, mm-hmm. Illuminati, mm-hmm. Young lizards, Tupac, yep. Gandhi, and chemtrails, and then finally population control. Those are the sections. None of it is funny. I've watched the entire thing, but I will play for you a little bit more because I think, and I think you'll agree with me in a second, he did not make a very crucial choice that the PragerU documentary did, which was add funny music under the bad comedy to make it almost tolerable.
Okay. Of them.
Why do we need more chemtrails?
They help control the population. You see, the two original people, Adam and Eve, obviously, they've created an inbred population of 7 billion people. That's too much for this planet. More importantly, kids can be annoying. Have you ever been on an airplane with kids? Talk about torture that'll cause you to lose your mind and drive you right into a fit of rage. Imagine a kid screaming and kicking the back of your seat for 3 hours while his mom just sits there doing nothing because she's in a Prozac-induced coma.
Why would she?
It's comedy, Benedict. It's comedy.
Okay, I will defend him a little bit.
Oh, you'll defend him for doing a hack bit that every comedian in the 80s did? Come on.
No. Premise-wise, conceptually, the hippy-dippy person that wants to kill all children.
Okay. It's fine.
Not fun. You know, like, love is everything, but also all children.
Mm. Here's the problem, Benedict. The problem is that J.P. Sears is an actual conspiracy theorist. And
yeah,
the only reason he does these videos...
That's the disconnect.
The only reason he does these videos is to be like, look, my conspiracies that the COVID vaccine is actually going to kill every person who took it, not as crazy as, kids are annoying, so we need...
What,
also, he actually believes in the population control conspiracy theory. So yeah. I don't even know why this is in this video.
This is only funny if he's making fun of this guy. And I don't think he is.
No, he is this guy.
This guy is him. Yeah.
It literally is. So I have thoughts about why, as he claims, this video was banned, why it might have been. And that might have something to do with the fact that nowhere in the entire description of this video, nowhere in anything here, does it actually say that this is a parody, that this is comedy, and it has all the buzzwords that the automated YouTube algorithm flags when it looks for stuff like that. That's probably what happened, and he probably cleared it up right away, and that's why the video is back available online right now. But in 2021, years after this video, whatever happened here supposedly happened, he's on PragerU complaining that they're banning him because his video got momentarily flagged, I suppose. That's how dumb this is. So back to it.
I woke up, that video had been out on YouTube for at least a week, and I woke up and video's gone. And it...
By the way, the video wasn't even called The Conspiracy Guy. That's not even the name of the video. He couldn't remember the name of his own video that they played in the documentary.
Cool.
I just had a message in the back end of YouTube saying this video's violated community guidelines. And it's...
Which guideline? They tell you which guidelines in the email. Why won't you tell us, JP? Big question.
Certainly, like, made me scared, like, what other videos are going to be taken down? But more importantly, how do I stay on YouTube? Like, how do I guard against being deplatformed? The only way to ensure
that's a word
I'm not
deplatformed.
That one has gone the way of the dodo. I think canceled is more in vogue now.
Yeah, I think so. Well, I think because it was literally like it arose from literally deplatforming people at like events, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like your Milos of this world.
It's a very summer of 2017 phrase.
I'd say summer of 2015, honestly, or 2016. I think it's... Anyway, carry on.
Around then, yeah.
...formed is I stopped making videos.
Dear Facebook.
Oh my God.
I am sorry. I unfortunately made a huge mistake of exercising free speech and trying to help people better their lives.
So he has tied himself to a chair with a couple people in the audience will get this reference, with Shibari rope. And he's recording a hostage video that apparently YouTube or Facebook took something down that he didn't tell us about. He didn't tell us about what happened with Facebook.
I'm What's sure it's because he posted something ridiculous. What's funny to me about these is like, okay, where did you post this video, bruv? Like,
hey, Facebook, the first words he says on the video? Yeah, dude, come on.
I now realize both of these things are in direct violation of your community guidelines.
I remember the day, it was in 2016, where I walked into the office one day and I got a bunch of emails, mostly from students who were saying that they were looking for our videos on YouTube and they couldn't find them.
I don't believe you. I don't believe you at all. Not in the slightest.
And I thought it was just some giant glitch in the system, a big mistake. And so we wrote it into YouTube saying, what is going on? Why can't students find our videos anymore?
It's never a mistake. And we always take them down deliberately. Once we got a hold-
oh, yeah, you and me personally. We're the ones. Yep. So there's a big red button on my desk. And I hit that button. It takes down a random conservative YouTube video. Mm-hmm. So I sit here slapping that button all day long. That's actually my job. I'm not even an attorney.
You actually get a dollar every time you press it, right?
These are the like Soros bucks, yeah.
One of those big psychological experiments.
It's connected. Like
that psychological experiment where it's like, hey, if you press this button, someone receives pain, but you get $1,000. That's you and the conservative video takedown button, that is.
Hell, I would do it for free.
Hold of someone there, they responded would you, that okay, they've been pause reviewing it, hold on. Our video.
And now I'm going to, how much would you pay for that button to exist?
Oh my God. Easy 5 years salary.
Okay. But no, not that, like how much would you pay per button press?
Per button press for me to be able to press it?
Bearing in mind, it could just take down a random zero views video.
But there's like a 1 in 500,000 chance I hit a Dave Rubin. Right? There's a chance of that. Or I hit a Matt Walsh. So yeah. I'll say I would pay a dollar a press. I'm going for like the big slot machine that you walk past in the casino. I'm for that one.
A dollar
no
a
chance
press?
Of winning. Virtually no chance of winning, but I'll feed a dollar into it and spin the wheel. All right. Absolutely.
And, like once a day or like you do that like 10 times a day?
I feel like, I mean, okay, it would be with my video game budgeting, right? So like I only am allowed to buy so many games because I'll never finish all the other ones, and I don't want to waste money. So for me, it'd be like, I have to come up with a budget for it. I'm allowed to press the button this number of times a day.
Okay. I want our audience to tell us, how much would you pay for the privilege, and how many times a day would you press the button?
Oh, as many times as I could press. If it was free, oh yeah, I'd be sick.
No. If you had to pay. If you had to pay, I know.
Videos and that PragerU videos are deemed inappropriate for young people, and that's why they're being restricted.
We have seen a ton of PragerU videos that are absolutely inappropriate for young people.
Yeah.
Not just because of the lies. Some of them are just gross. Sometimes they get gross on PragerU.
It was shocking. I think that this is not just an issue for PragerU. It's not just an issue for content creators. It's certainly not just an issue for those on the right. This is an issue for all citizens who believe that they should hear the truth and make their own decisions about things.
So that's the attempt, that's the closest we get to any sort of like argument here, because it's taken as a given that they're persecuted. Other than that little argument right there, they just take it as given. We are the right, we are persecuted. And she's the only one who pretends it's a left-right issue, right? She's, other than everybody else, they all think, oh, it's just the right this is happening to. But of course, as we all know, in the real world, it just so happens that they're a bunch of liars, which tends to cause problems.
Even if they don't agree with the content that we make, they should still have the right to hear opposing points of view.
The right to hear opposing points of view. Tell us what those are. What are those points of view? Is it the Chris Rufo video you made that we should arrest all of the homeless? Because I don't think there's really any issue with anyone not hearing that point of view. You can hear that everywhere. It's just a shitty point of view.
Yeah, and I think that, I mean, the problem with this is, like, none of these discussions get into the scale of what's produced online, right? And, like, there has to be a way of surfacing whatever people perceive as the most valuable content. Because basically, unless you're in page one of the search results or you're searching for something hyper-specific, you're not going to be found, really. You're not going to be discovered. So it's about like what we make discoverable versus not like what gets served up at the top of the rankings of different things. And like at the end of the day, that is a programming choice of some form. And there is some thinking behind it. It's just, yeah.
Well, I would go a step beyond that. And I would say that the reality is that even if we had a world in which there wasn't, let's say, a liberal bias like they think exists, right? If it was really just everything's flat and even all across the plane, conservative content would still be taken down, censored, delisted, demonetized, whatever, more than left-wing content because they're shit. They're shitty people because there's white supremacists because they're pushing white supremacist talking points. And in no world is that acceptable in society. I don't want to live in a world where that's acceptable in society. You get what I mean? Mm-hmm. But that's the problem. The issue they face is not just that there's a left-wing political bias and they're just going after us for politics. It's not about politics. It's because you're objectionable liars. That's the point. That's the point for me. You can talk about algorithms.
And I think what I would also say is, I mean, they talk about the, you know, going from free distribution to paid distribution. Mm-hmm. That would be the same if all content were created equal as well. In fact, it probably would have happened quicker. Because then if all content is truly created equal, there's no recommendation engine, anything like that, then it's just whoever pays the most that gets surfaced to the top,
right?
Or it's whoever's already the most popular, in which case you get a bunch of established players getting their videos pushed to the top and nobody new can break through. So it's either you pay to play or you can't enter the market because you can never compete with the big boys.
My real hot take is that there is no version of a content platform like YouTube or Facebook or whatever that could make everyone happy. It's just not possible.
No. It's just not possible. They're all, everything is way too big to make everyone happy.
Yeah. And way too big, something they're going to talk about here, although they don't seem to understand what antitrust is.
No.
What I saw happening was that these activist employees, the executive team at Facebook had a real hard time pushing back against them, saying no to them. Mark would say it in our Friday Q&As, but then
this guy pretending he's on first name basis with Mark Zuckerberg, A, very funny to me. B, this guy's story also very funny to me. Because this is a guy, did we say his name earlier? Brian Amerijay or Amerijay, I don't know which one it is. This guy left Facebook back in, I think, 2018 is when he left. After his memo was, quote unquote, leaked to the press, titled, "We Have a Problem with Political Diversity."
Oh, man, he didn't even get the Fired for Truth.
No, here's the thing. It's very funny to me. He was trying to pull a James Damore. He was trying to get fired for writing something, but they just didn't care.
They were like,
and he just sort of like, okay, I guess I'll go and try and make a career out of this somehow. And that's really what it is.
To James Damore?
Who the fuck knows? Okay, he had 30 seconds.
He probably has a fucking podcast.
I'm sure he does. The other thing about him, about his time as Facebook, the only thing notable is that he attempted to get Facebook to take down a trans solidarity piece of art that someone had at Facebook. And they said, no. So that was it. And now he hangs out and gives speeches to Ayn Rand objectivist organizations.
Sure.
Because he's a big objectivist who I'm sure is not going to say at all that he wants government regulation of these big tech companies.
That's funny because he's also objectable.
So. Nice one.
What would actually happen is that we would sort of ratchet further and further toward a policy that
there's just like a big dial that says racism on it, and you turn it up and down based on the crowd's reaction. Yeah.
No, so where do you start? You start at neutral, right? And then you go to CRT, and then you go to DEI, and then what's the final stop on the button? Is it just full on communism? Is gay luxury space communism?
That's it.
That's it. That's the last one.
We've never
broadened and broadened the definition of hate speech.
Full gay luxury space communism has never really been tried.
That's it. We're never getting through this video, by the way.
Identity groups.
Like,
Facebook,
there is no way we're getting through this whole video.
Probably not. I don't know, but I'm having fun with it. This is a pretty enjoyable episode for me.
I just think we're going to get to 10 minutes and then have to stop, which is fine. I'm just telling you.
Broaden it. And I started giving feedback about that. I started sort of raising the alarm bells from the perspective of this being a platform for ideas.
Ideas.
So, ideas. First of all, the stock footage they cut to then.
So bad.
And it is bad, but it's also very funny because it looked like he was in a meeting with HR because there was like two people.
Probably sat. About misgendering a coworker.
No, probably
right?
Just about being like, dude, shut up. Like, yeah. Stop complaining and do your job. Like,
I really get, those are the vibes I get, is that's this guy's experience of Facebook, is everybody just being like, come on, dude. And then just be like, no, I want to have the racists on Facebook.
When I started challenging what was happening, people wouldn't even talk about it. You know, they called me a hate monger for even daring to criticize the hate speech policy. And even the people who did agree with me were very clear in saying, but I am not willing to actually say anything to anybody else in the company about it. I'm afraid to talk about this because I think my career is on the line.
It's always convenient for any story when all the people, so many people agree with you. They just couldn't talk about it.
They can't say anything in public. Yeah.
Yeah. That's why you can't find all those people. They live in Canada.
These are all my friends just off screen laughing along.
We met over summer break and they live in Canada. Exactly.
I started pushing harder and harder when I saw that. I started vocalizing more and more about the fact that we were becoming a monoculture. And we started to have issues with people who weren't.
I mean, the other part of this is just that people complaining about it's a monoculture. Why don't we have? It's because conservatism brings nothing of value. It brings nothing of value to the table. There's nothing there, valuable. Period.
Current left leaning, expressing what they thought, you know, about our content policy, about sort of PR stances the company was taking, how it was defending itself. Even, you know, in some cases, about the art that ended up going up on the walls.
That, I'm pretty sure, is a sideways reference to his attempt to take down the trans-inclusive artwork.
I don't want to name names. Somebody in the C-suite at Facebook had a conversation with me where they made it very, very clear. They understand my argument, and they disagree. And it's not going to change. This is
okay. So end of story.
That's how the C-suite works. I hate to tell you how. I hate to let you about business, dude. Like, if the C-suite can be like, yeah, I can see where you're coming from, but also shut up. That's not what we do here. Yeah,
I mean,
that's
how
the fucking C-suite works, dude. Yeah. What do you want me to tell you?
That's just, I mean, hey, it could have been like a middle manager. I'm sure he's lying about it being the C-suite. I don't trust this guy as far as I can throw him.
That's how fucking hierarchy works at big companies. Let me tell you that.
This is the direction they're going in. They're committed to it, and they reject my argument that it is a fundamental contradiction to try to innovate their way out of enforcing what is an ill-defined and impossible-to-define concept like hate speech.
So that guy just spent like fucking 3 minutes rambling and saying almost nothing. But at the end there, that's the part I think that matters. Because we've seen all these people today who refuse to tell us what is it that you were supposedly deplatformed for. And I think a lot of it probably comes back to that hate speech stuff. Mm-hmm. They want to be able to do hate speech. So say that. Don't try and work your way around it and be like, well, I just did a policy. You can't do this. It's unenforceable. You can't even define what hate speech is. I can define what hate speech is. Plenty of people can define what hate speech is. The problem is agreeing on a definition. The problem is agreeing on a definition. That's the issue. But what you really want is to do the hate speech and to have more of the hate speech. So say it. Or argue that what people are saying is hate speech is not. But they refuse to do that because those are indefensible positions. They're just really not.
Voltaire really threw us under the bus when he said, I don't like what you say, but I will defend your death. Sure, Voltaire, like in theory, but have you ever met this fucking guy? Because
look, if you're stuck in an office as this guy's middle manager, you're really going to have to struggle, Voltaire. Come on. You're going to get out of that meeting and tell me you still want to support his free speech? Come on.
That I was going to write my badge post right after that.
I'm Rachel Bovard, the Senior Director of Policy at the Conservative Partnership Institute. It wasn't really till 2013 that I started taking an interest in big tech. And that was after Edward Snowden revealed that all of the big tech companies had willingly thrown open their back doors to CIA.
Now,
that sounds like a euphemism.
lots of it going on today. I don't believe this woman, again, for more reasons. One being the fact that when I did a time-based Google of her name, along with tech, along with big tech, along with several different variations, I didn't find anything earlier than 2019. So I don't really believe you, Rachel, when you say that you got interested back in 2013. I think you kind of got swept up in a lot of stuff going on where, like, Ted Cruz was screaming about big tech in Congress, and you decided to write some Federalist articles, like you did when you wrote your article on The Federalist, which is titled, "The 1980s Called, They Want Their Foreign Policy Back, and Republicans to Finally Wake Up." Okay. In which she included the paragraph, "Conservatism Turned Up to 11," which reads, quote, "Defeating it, rescuing America from it, will not require conservatives to abandon our principles, but to double down on them. Properly considered populist, nationalist, new conservatism is in many ways just conservatism turned up to 11. It's not half-hearted slogans about deregulation and free enterprise.
No, but this fucking article is. I'll tell you that.
It's a radical commitment to defending the family from the relentless assault of technology, anti-human ideology, and economic exploitation." Yeah, anti-human. That's the kind of... But, buddy, you need to read The Federalist more. You want to read more about the anti-human ideology of the left? Need to spend some more time reading The Federalist. But that's what this woman gets up to. And, yeah, I don't believe her that she got interested back in 2013.
"The NSA, to track everyday Americans, to share our photos with them, our emails, our videos, even voice recordings. And I thought, this doesn't seem very kosher, so what else are they up to? All of these industry titans can demonetize these guys with the flick of a wrist. They've completely wiped out someone's livelihood. They can decide now who can make money on their platforms. And in many cases, you know, that's how someone feeds their family. So the power of these...
Yeah, because you're making money through their ad network.
Right.
That's yes, they can decide who makes money on their platforms. That
it is
sucks,
not to say.
But it's always been true.
Yes. It is not to say that it is a problem that so many people are at the whim of giant companies. But the reason why so many people are at the whim of giant companies is the fucking capitalism this chick pushes. Mm-hmm. That's exactly why it happens. Right. That's the issue, is the fact that we have allowed these monopolies to be created. And she's about to talk about antitrust here, which she does not understand.
I bet she does not get it.
She does not understand, because my listening to what she has to say is she seems to think it's an antitrust when you take down a conservative's YouTube video. That's not what that is. That is not what that is.
Companies have to decide who can access the marketplace, who can access the guts of capitalism. That is now in the hands of Jeff Bezos, Mark Zuckerberg, Sundar Pichai, and Jack Dorsey. And that is terrifying for a lot of small content creators.
I think now is a good place to stop, honestly.
You think now's a good spot? We're about halfway through the video. And yeah, this is the point where they start talking about Parler and antitrust and all this stuff. So maybe we'll turn this into a two-parter, and we can do the rest of this another time. Maybe we'll do the rest for patrons. I don't know. We'll figure that out.
Yeah.
I guess we can end it there.
Yeah. I think just to sum it up, I mean, it's kind of the usual nonsense. I mean, literally,
nothing said, was there?
No, I mean, it's like the ecosystem. They're complaining about the ecosystem in which they have to operate in, which is fine, but it's also the ecosystem that everybody has to operate in. And like it or not, when your content is inherently political, which a lot of this stuff is by virtue of the type of content that it is, or when it could be flagged as political, you're going to lose ad dollars because people don't like being put next to political content, just as a blanket statement. So if your whole livelihood is dependent on political content, you may struggle. That's true.
Well, I would go beyond saying just that it's inherently political. It goes beyond that. It's inherently hateful. Because the things they're complaining, if they put up a video about, I don't know, Keynesian economics is bad, nobody's going to take that down. There's not going to be a strike on that. Nothing's going to happen to it. It's when they put up videos that are full of anti-trans hate, that are full of bigotry, that kind of stuff, the stuff they refuse to tell us is what's being taken down, even though we all know that's what's being taken down, that's what it is. That's the issue there. And they want to be, they want a world in which they are allowed to perpetuate their hate on whatever platforms they want, whenever they want. Which is why they make this antitrust argument, why they talk about Section 230 and all that, because they don't want any of their hate. There's going to be, they're going to be talking about it in the second half, yeah. They don't want any of that to be addressed, any of their hate to be addressed. That's what they really care about. But anyways, Benedict, I thought that was fun.
It was a nice little fun episode.
It was a good time. I think we're going to enjoy some of these short documentaries in the future.
Yeah, I think that'd be good.
But anyways, thank you all for listening. We hope you enjoyed the show. Remember, if you just can't get enough of us, you can go over to patreon.com/NYGBC. Become a patron for as little as $1 an episode for patron-only episodes. Shout-outs on the show, early releases of our episodes, I forgot how I do the outro, and more. As always, we have to give a shout-out to our wonderful and amazing patrons, NYGBC Fangirl, Eric the Baker, Hey Kevin, I became a member to say you were correct about Brennan E. Mulligan, Brian Smith, Dan L., Teach Peace, Dr. Milmini and Len Linlian Swinwomley, I stumbled on it this week, Swinwomley, the ghost of Larry Nichols, Jacob Johnson, Danny Rosari, how do I stop Microsoft edging? new buildings are a globalist conspiracy. Bobo,
tell it to hurry up already. That's how.
Bobo D. Bear. You blow on it a little bit. Chili. Matt, never stop being you. Never stop being you, that patron who I don't know how to refer to because you change the name every week. It's the best. It's great. I love it. Madeline and Zachary Wilson Fetro, Shadow Princess vs. the Raptor Wolves, Sean Sullivan, Lauren S., New Year, same old sad bastard. Oh, Benedict, what art thou, bright spot?
A fun little documentary. That was
It is fun. Flack Weasel, Sadie's Sister Wednesday, Kieran Dackler, join us next week when we review Shake It Off, Proletariat's version.
Is that the capitalist
All right, you're
hierarchy?
Getting inducted next week. You're getting inducted next week because I told people to send in their versions of the music that we were talking about. Their version. What was the topic that we did? It was it wasn't communist songs. It was something like that,
kind
though.
Of, yeah.
Something like that, and that's you did it. So you're getting a shout out next week. Henry Louis King Jr., Sarah Wolf, Aaron Burke, Megan A. Dooley, Clifton Stuckey, Pause, A Restless Native, A Baby, Wah, Veronica Forker, Melissa C., George Saulnier, Tinker's Dam and Skell, Stefan, Shark Belly, Utah Outcast, Dave Barwick, Chris Palmer, Bad Bible Stitches, Mockingbird Nation, Bacaw, Allison, Megan Ruth, Glaurung the Deceiver, Big Easy Blasphemy, Jay Reynolds, Stephen and Cindy Dimmick, Taru Takanen, and Balls Watterson. Thank you all, as always, for being our patrons. That's it for this week's show. Till next time, edging. Goodbye.
Bye.
The Not Your Grandmother's Book Club podcast is a production of Kevin and Benedict Productions. Copyright 2020, all rights reserved. Music for this podcast is by Silverman Sound Studios. Find out more at silvermansound.com.